Hi, guys. This story is an extended version of one of my jobs I did at CERN. With almost 30 extra minutes, you can fit a lot more in. So I really hope that you enjoy it. Hi, and welcome to the Dark Web Vlogs, where I'm sharing the experiences I've had working with clients on some of the most outrageous deals being run over the dark web. What happens when one dimension spreads over into another? Well, according to a senior particle physicist at CERN, it causes a shift in the space-time continuum, which can cause big issues. The life we think we're living may or may not be what we think. Stephen Hawking brought up issues with experiments at CERN, but maybe we as a people don't care, or maybe we don't want to care. Maybe we just choose to accept the many conspiracy theories out there revolving around CERN because it's less scary. They're just fun fantasies. Well, this man claims what we are living is no fantasy, that we're experiencing a Mandela effect like no other, and it started at CERN. Can it be reversed? He's asked me to accompany him into a project that is urgent for the world, and one he hopes will shed light on how to make things right. They call me the Ghost. I'm ex-CIA and now a dark operative on the dark web. I've worked a lot of jobs, and today is my account of what happened when I was invited into another dimension to try to help our own. Take a listen and enjoy. Part 1. So, I was on my way home from the UK where I was on a job, and the whole team was there, and we flew back together. And the minute I land, this request comes through over the dark web, like they always do. It's another urgent job, and it's another one at CERN, which gets my attention, and I check it out before I'm even at the office. Now, I've done jobs at CERN before, but this one was big and close to home. His request is about the people, all of us, living here on the little planet we call Earth, our home. He tells me that a door was opened and that we have been invaded by a force, an energy, and it's changing lives. That we have experienced an overlap with another dimension where we all could be living, maybe similar lives, but not exact. This energy is now basically managing mass amounts of people here, and it's pulling them all in one direction, a direction that will only hurt society and the people overall. It's self-destructive for humans everywhere. This all happened when something at CERN that could have been seen as a success was anything but. He needs to try to open that door again so he can study what has happened and if there's anything that can be done about it. He's asked me to meet him at a villa near CERN that he's rented out for me and him to spend some time reviewing his research. I'm taking Frankie with me for this meeting, and the rest of my team, they'll stand by. So we basically unload and reload, and before we know it, we're taking another trip across the pond to meet with my requester, who I'll call Julius. When Frankie and I get to the villa, Julius is already there, and he's unpacking a ton of boxes from his SUV. And we pull up and start helping him bring it all inside. And when we finally sit down to go over the project in more detail, he gives us the lowdown, and I clearly took the job, and I'm flying out the rest of my team. And in the meantime, Julius was full of information. So he presents the scenario where someone fully believes a fact, idea, or perspective, but they can't remember how it all got started. And then what if this happened to a mass group of people? A bunch of people thinking the same thing or doing the same things. Are they simply like-minded? I mean, how did they get that way? Well, he refers to the Mandela effect, where people believe things to be true even though history tells you different or facts tell you different. In this case, the people believe they are fighting. They are consumed with the idea that anyone different from them should be hated. Where's that logic? There isn't any. But like with all things Mandela, you can put fact after fact in front of somebody, but they will swear that what they know is true. People act irrational. And right now, you know, you can't notice someone's skin color, their gender. You can't notice if they're a man or a woman. You can't talk about animals, sing songs. I mean, the list goes on. Something has taken effect. And now, with the people overly emotional about pretty much everything, when they're not talking to each other, they're just fighting, pretty much eliminating communication altogether. And although people everywhere are changing, this is a fact that's completely unbeknownst to them. It, in fact, has the opposite effect. They feel like they're more sensitive and they're more right than ever. And no matter what facts you would try to present to them, it's like they're under a spell and it's making all their decisions for them. To them, they're entering a war, like they're in a war. Although there isn't one, and their war isn't with anyone in particular, it's just with everyone in general, with each other. I mean, take the United States, a nation that was built on free speech and the acceptance of all kinds of people. How is it that everyone became a racist, or maybe an anti-Semite, bigot, or even a sexist? Well, Julius says it's because we've been affected, and he's referencing the Mandela effect to help explain it. I mean, do we remember when this PC thing all got crazy? Where were you? Did it happen to you? And I mean, we can blame these things on emotional sensitivity, you know? But is everyone just trying to be very caring? Well, Julius says no. And okay, now, it's pretty common knowledge, or maybe you want to call it a conspiracy, that CERN works to open that door. You know, a door to another dimension. But they have been working on it for a while, so why would it really be that hard to believe it hasn't happened already? Julius says it has. All right, so let's just look at this all for a second. What is another dimension in the first place? What does that mean? Simply put, it's another place, just with different possibilities. You may not think they exist, but as Einstein said, God does not play dice, challenging uncertainty. If we even have a hint that there's another dimension out there, there probably is. So, okay, let's say other dimensions, but then what happened here? Well, Julius claims that it happened to us, but that it's not our CERN that did it. It's the one on the other side, in the other dimension. They broke through to our world, and it brought madness. According to Julius, after they really got things going at CERN, and I mean, you know, now we have the LHC and the God particle, but I mean, anyway, they were making a lot of breakthroughs. But through all of it, they've been determined to open a portal. Now, he's not going to tell me all about that, but clearly something was happening here, right? But in this issue, what they got was obviously not something they expected. I mean, they never would have expected something to come through at them. And when the portal was opened to our side, this strong force moved through our universe and changed, even if just by a little, the space and time we know. Anyway, not long after this incident, the people started changing. The world's changing. There's definitely strange behavior. I mean, the political correctness has been happening for a while now, but really, how did it happen this way? I mean, how did mass amounts of people flip over to be enemies with each other? It's like it happened overnight and then spread. There's been a shift, and unless you're someone lost in it all, you've probably seen it. The people it's affected, though, they have no idea. It's like they were all wiped of their memory and reprogrammed without them even knowing. But okay, we're listening, and then Frankie brings up the question, why wasn't everyone affected? Well, we learned there's pretty much no real concrete explanation for that, but some are definitely unaffected. Will that last forever? There's no way to tell. But for some reason, some people resisted this wave of energy invading our space. And I mean, without them, there could be a full-on real war over this whole mess. Julius then brings in an example closer to home and goes on to share that his own father, who was a scientist before he retired, has also succumbed to the craziness, you know? And so the question is, was he weak? Was he sick? How did it happen? But there was just no way to tell, at least not yet, what caused some to be affected and others not. Either way, what Julius wants to do now is break through to the other side, and he wants a team to go in with him to make sure he comes back in one piece. But okay, what exactly does he mean by that? Well, he explains it. The energy from there is what's affecting us here, right? And this makes sense. So it's going to affect us there too. And just because someone's not affected right now in our world, there's a lot more of it over there. It is their world. So it could possibly drive someone from our side insane, even someone that's not affected now. But to study this, he has to go in. The risk, be sucked into that world and lose his mind, basically. Now, CERN is willing to allow this trip, but when you handpick a lot of your top scientists, you can't exactly risk all of your top people going in. And it's a lot better when someone is willing. And since Julius is so close to this project and has a clear passion to see it through, he will be the one. And he's chosen me and my team to go in with him. One thing that we have going for us is that because this is a direct line from the other side, we know exactly where we're going to come out the other side, something you don't always have control over. We know that we're going to end up at CERN. What we don't know is what we're going to find there. But now, your question probably is, and mine was, how do we not lose our minds? You know, me and my team. How are we able to help Julius if we are going to the same place? Aren't we going to lose our minds and forget who we are? Well, it is very risky, but they are going to do what they can to protect us, and they have a plan. Me and my team will be given a chemical injection that changes energy, the energy we project and the energy that bounces off of us. By taking this, it will hopefully protect us from any of that energy on the other side that could affect us. Julius will not take this, and it's by his own choice. You know, he's of the science mind, and he wants to know everything on the other side, even if he gets affected. If he's also given the injection, he won't know for himself what happens to us if we go to another dimension like this. Something he wants to know if he's going to take this trip at all. So there's no talking him out of it. And with us there, he feels good that we can get him back if anything happens. Okay, so this is a lot, and I have some of preparing of my own to do. I need to get some of my team out here, and I let Julius know that the rest of my team is coming, and that my plan will be to have Scarlett join Frankie and I on the trip, and then Ryder will stay back at CERN with Jagger, just in case, you know, something does happen and there's actually something they can do about it. So we get through all of that, and that's fine, and then it's time to meet with some of the people on Julius's team. The four people helping to prep this project come to the villa, and now we really get set up. So I can see now why Julius got the villa instead of, you know, say a hotel. There's a lot of stuff. They show Frankie and I what they think we might see on the other side, and what their simulations and computer projections show them we could expect. Then we go over more of what Julius needs to do, and they review the injections one more time. We will be injected once, 1 hour before we head out, and then one more time right before we go. They're also going to implant identity chips in the back of our necks that will be detected by all CERN security pass-throughs, or should be if it's the same. So if for some reason we all do lose our minds, we can only hope that someone at CERN will figure it out and try to help. They will give us these pulse emitters that use energy to send out a pulse wave that are meant to put people out for a while so that we can buy some time if we need to. We will also leave with tasers and little flashlights. And the tasers and flashlights are going to be filled with quartz and magnets. They have this all set up to generate the power to run them. It's pretty cool. And my guys are bringing stuff too. It's just hard to say what will be functional over there because you're not sure what you're going to get. So it definitely helps to bring things that they think have the best chance. It was a lot to go over. And after a long night, Julius's guys head out, and it's time for some shut-eye. And then Frankie, Julius, and I will head to CERN first thing in the morning. So we get there the next day, and the place was crazy. I mean, it always has busy people everywhere, but there was a hype in the air for sure. The rest of my team shows up right as we're about to go down to the lab. They showed me a lot of reports and things at the villa, you know, even simulations, but I was ready and excited to see what they had going on in person. So it's down to the lab we go. And they take us down to what looks maybe like a music recording room, only a big one. It's separated by glass, and there's tons of crazy stuff. It looks like soundproofing on the walls. But they explain that what that stuff does is a lot more than that. It keeps not just the sound out, it keeps any radiated energy inside. This room has a huge wall of computers and gadgets on it, and the glass is bulletproof, and then some. And the entire room was built around this portal opening. Thing was, when all of this got started, they didn't think anything would happen that did, right? I mean, they were dealing with and experimenting with things the human eye could barely even see. So when the burst came through, right through their machines, they weren't even sure what it was at first. And after all the smoke cleared and they saw what it had really done, they saw it had shot a hole through the wall and their machines. And then 2 minutes later, anyone in the path of what came through passed out. That's when they decided they had to build this special room. and protect it. They called it the blast room, which they built big enough to handle another blast. But like I said, the room was protected. And the great news was that inside that room was exactly where we would all be going through this thing. My first question on that was, how are we going to get pushed or pulled through? I see they have a few things set up, so I wanted to know. Since this portal blew a strong force to our side, that was the plan from our side. This was not a road, it was not an engineered tunnel, so they had no idea what one would be dealing with once they got inside. I mean, Julius did try to find out. He put on some special space-like gear and had communicators and lights and things and tried to walk through it, and he's a stubborn guy. But when he reached somewhere around 2 miles, he turned around. And he said it was just black, and after he got in a little ways, it was like dirt underneath his feet. But the lights showed dirt, and when he looked closely, it started to get shiny as he went, like they had little specks in it or something. There were no other changes before he ended up turning around. And I mean, that whole exercise was a big risk, because if anything did happen, it's not like he could just get out fast. I mean, what if there was another forced blast that came through? There'd be a good chance he wouldn't have made it out at all. So, with no luck having the other dimension suck him up the other side or him reaching the other side, they tried something else. CERN engineers put together a capsule. It was about 2 feet long that would be able to communicate back to them what it saw or where it was, and with enough power to go for 500 miles. When this capsule stopped communicating, the idea would be that it would have gotten to the other side, or at least close. It would communicate back things like weather conditions, the space it had around it, sound, and if it got stopped in flight before reaching the other side, things like that. It was also equipped with a camera, and maybe they could learn something about the tunnel along the way, if that worked. And it did, and they wanted to show us what was on this video. But first, we get our first shots. Okay, so with that done, and the blast room still closed up, and us in the next room, they bring up the capsule video on the big screen. It wasn't very long, because the capsule moved really fast, but they did slow it down so we could see what little details there were to see. And the camera was fisheye, so we could see, you know, the dirt change, like what Julius saw. And it changed so much when it traveled that it was silver by the time this thing was done. Also, there did seem to be light somewhere, around 200 miles, but it was more like a light blast. It was flashing, and then there were some popping sounds, and then it just went silent. The flashing light was gone. The camera caught nothing. Not again until 250 miles. And at that point, the capsule picked up another light. It wasn't flashing or anything. But before we could see what all that was about, the communications went dead. Their best guess, well, their hope really, was that it reached the other side. They didn't sense any changes in the space itself until it literally seemed like it just became space. So where did that leave all of us and getting Julius to the other side? Well, they already had a plan for that. And of course they did. And all I wanted to know was what was under that covering and sitting outside of the portal. Part 2. So, okay, the capsule they used to run their tests wasn't all that big, right? It was 2 feet long. It didn't need to be. But to get us through, we would need something bigger. And that's when they got to the really fun stuff. Same concept, but bigger. So we'll be traveling the same way in a capsule. And this is how we will go. We, meaning Julius, me, Scarlett, and Frankie, will all be squished into this thing like sardines, and they're going to shoot us through this tunnel, just like they did the little capsule. We will be fit with travel suits, oxygen, and our other supplies. The whole idea sounds crazy at first, but I mean, if CERN can accelerate high-energy particle beams close to the speed of light, I feel pretty confident here that they can get us through this portal. Now, before Julius found me and sent in his request, they were already working on the strategy to get him through safely. And CERN, if you didn't know, has hundreds of engineers and technicians that work on machines, big ones, built with many components. Their work needs to be consistent and precise, and it needs to work. And we're hoping it does, because I, for one, would like to make it there and make it back. As they're explaining all this travel stuff to us, 3 more guys and a woman walk in. This would be our capsule crew. And now it's time for us to actually go into the blast room. But before we go in, they require that we suit up. And the suits they have for us are literally bomb suits. They're not quite as big as the bomb squad guys wear, you know, like puffy, but they're made of the same stuff. The front has pouches for extra equipment, which we clearly will have. There's back protection and other parts where we can insert soft type armor. So these guys are serious. Before we put those on, though, we need our second shot. So we get that done. And now we really are ready to go. We get all geared up and we head into this room. And they uncover this larger capsule. And it's all ready for us. It was about 10 feet long, about 2 feet in diameter. The top is clear and there are 4 seats inside. It's tight, but okay, I get it. They have this capsule thing set up on a track that is going to shoot us into this blasted tunnel. The capsule has a built-in guidance system, so the good thing is that it will know where to go even if it's pitch black for us. I mean, this whole thing, it's intimidating, but most of my jobs are. And I mean, I just look at my team and we're actually kind of excited. I mean, pretty much we're all adrenaline junkies and live for the challenge. And I have an incredible team. And now here we are, about to be launched into this tunnel. It's crazy. But anyway, back to the job. Okay, so we all pile into this thing. Up front is Julius, then it's me, Scarlett, and then Frankie in the back. And remember, each one of us is self-contained. We all have our supplies on our person. I have my backpack stuffed in the front of my suit. We have oxygen. We have hydration and electrolyte tablets if we need those on the other side. So, I mean, basically, if we all did get separated or something happened, we can take care of ourselves. And the plan would be to get back to the capsule and meet there. There's one engineer that stays back in the blast room to watch over us and see what happens, but everyone else leaves. They will initiate the launch via the computer from the other room. We watch our watcher as he counts down for us, and then we're off. I mean, the minute his hand made that fist, we were out of there. We felt the burst behind us, and then we just shot forward. And I was glad to have seen the video of the little capsule because it was helpful. You know, when you're being shot out into the unknown, we at least had a little bit of idea, or we hoped, of what to sort of expect. The capsule we were in, though, did have lights on the outside, so we could see the blasted out concrete just right when we took off, but then it went black. I couldn't see down to the ground, so I didn't know if that dirt was underneath us or not. I didn't see if anything turned silver. And I have to say, the ride was pretty smooth. All we heard was a small humming from it moving. And we did feel it move from side to side a little bit, which told me that we weren't exactly going in a straight line. And then we saw the light. It was just like in the video, but we were moving so fast. We heard sort of a screeching sound when that happened. And then after that, it all stopped. It was completely silent. We didn't even hear the humming of the capsule. There were no sounds from the outside, and we saw nothing. We had the lights on the capsule, and it lit up pretty good, but they didn't show us anything either. It felt like we were just floating in space, and really, who knows where we were? And then we saw another hint of light ahead. Even though we were moving really fast, the black just faded into the white, and it got really bright, really bright. So we were all kind of closing our eyes off and on and waiting for that to stop. And then it started to get better. I mean, there's still white light there, but it's not harsh. It's just normal. So then we're all looking around for anything else that there is to see, but there isn't anything. Just this soft light that seems to be all around us now. And we're waiting for what comes next when Julius says that that's it. We're here where we are, and we're going to get out. And he's right. We realize we've stopped moving. It's like we were just speeding along and got shot out into space, and then we slowly came to a stop wherever this is. So Julius flips this security lever that he has up front, and Frankie has one in the back, and he does the same. And then the top slowly opens up from the side, and we unhook our safety belts, and we make sure we're all in one piece. Then we start standing up to check things out, you know, make sure there's ground under our feet, things like that. And it looks okay, so we get out. And then we test our breathing without our oxygen, and we seem to be fine there too. So we take those off, but we do keep them with us just in case our situation changes. We take off our suits though, and we leave them with the capsule. They were for the ride basically, and will only make us stand out if we wear them on the other side. So we don't want to have them with us. And so that's it. We landed and we start heading in the direction the capsule is pointing us, and also walking to where the light seems to be coming from. We go for what seems like a while, but things in there get a little weird, so you're not really sure about time. I did wear a watch, but the time is exactly the same time as when we left. So I'm thinking that's not really going to help me much, which I have to say I thought would happen, but for myself, I just wanted to know, so I wore it. Things do start to change a little bit the farther we get, and we start to notice these black walls. They're made of brick, and they're out to the sides, far enough that we can barely see them, but we do see them. And the closer we get to what seems to be the source of this light, the closer the walls get to us. So that's kind of interesting. Then Julius suddenly stops, and he falls to the ground. And so we all, like, gather around him, and we're checking him out. We're not sure what's going on, but we're in a portal, and weird things can happen. But he's holding his head, and then he looks up and says he can't see. And we just try to get him to his feet, and we urge him to keep going. Because the job is to get him there to see what he could find and then try to get him back safely. We're not even there yet, so we're hoping this gets better. And after we get him moving, his symptoms do start to pass, which is great. And then things start getting really misty, and now it's kind of hard for all of us to see. But then, without even noticing any difference in the surroundings, we step out of it. We made it, and we recognize that we have just walked into CERN. We are in a room, but there's no one there. We know we're at CERN because we see things that tell us we are, but the room is in shambles. There are CERN notebooks on the floor, a blown-out computer, there's a desk on its side, things like that. We all just kind of look at each other and checking things out, and I start checking Julius out because I want to make sure with the head pressure he just had that nothing else is happening. I mean, I think we're all a little worried at this point that we might not have much time if he already got affected before we even got there. Anyway, we head for the only door that's in there, but it's locked. And Julius walks right up to it and starts pounding the door, and he's calling out his employee number. And, you know, not that that really should work over there, but he's telling him that he works at CERN. And they do finally open the door. They look around the room, and then they rush us inside. Julius tells them that he doesn't have much time, but that he needs to see who's ever in charge. He tells them he came through the portal that they created. And now, while he's doing that, I'm looking around. There are two guys in this room, and what's weird is I see a fairly large door, and it's closed. It has a steel beam secured across it, keeping it shut. And the guys look kind of messed up. I mean, it's like they've been sitting there working for days. And they also don't seem to want to talk about what Julius is asking, but he pushes them, and they finally do. They tell us that there was an explosion, but that it was a long time ago, and that after that, everyone seemed to go crazy. Well, Julius tells them that he understands, even though he doesn't really know exactly what they're talking about yet. But he tells them that's why he's there and he wants to try to fix things. I mean, these guys almost seem scared, but they do eventually let us out of the room. And what we walk into was a bit of a surprise. The whole area is in shambles, just like the other room. And we need to figure out where we are, you know, inside of CERN right now, because it kind of looks different. But the more in we go, we start to see people. They seem kind of in a daze. They look clean cut, like they're ready to work here. They're carrying notebooks and things. But where are they working is what I want to know, because everything is a total mess. And no one really looks at us. It's really strange. Well, I take that back. A couple of people did, but they didn't say anything. It was almost like they're robots. Julius takes all that in and decides that he's just had enough. And he stands right in front of this woman that walks by, and he asks if he could speak to her. And she just looks down and says she works at CERN, and she walks away. Frankie goes for it next, and he stops this man that's walking by, and he holds out his hand to say hello. You know, he's testing to see if he can get an answer. But this guy doesn't even give him, you know, an "I work at CERN." Instead, he puts his hand to Frankie's, and then he looks Frankie right in the eyes, almost like he's studying him. And then his eyes go red. And then Frankie notices he's squeezing his hand hard. This guy's not that big, but he's super strong. I mean, Frankie's a big guy, so this is not normal, you know, for someone to have this control over him. We look at this guy more closely, and we see that he has a metal piece on his head to the side above his ear. And Frankie's hand is about to get crushed, so I take out my hand taser that took to my backpack, and I tase him in the shoulder. He doesn't even flinch, but he does let go of Frankie. This guy just doesn't care about us anymore, and he simply walks around Frankie and walks away. And we start looking around, and all the people kind of look the same, just with small differences in their faces so you can tell them apart. And what we realized is that all of these almost lookalikes are actually robots. It's crazy, but the question is why? So we decide to walk and go where everyone's coming from. And basically what we figure out is that these robot people are going down an elevator, walking around and across a little bit, and then going up an elevator to the other side. They're doing this and just going in circles. So they're coming and going from nowhere. This is definitely odd, and hopefully we'll get an answer to what's going on here. The good news is that we now recognize where we are. So we go up to the floor that is familiar to where Julius does a lot of his work back home, an area where most of the physicists work. And we do see people, but they all have that robot look, and they're just sitting at these little desks doing various things. But when they see us, they just point. Well, the ones that look at us do. And they're pointing to an office on the outside edge of their floor. So we head there, and we're invited in. There's a man sitting there with his feet on the desk, and he looks smug. We can also tell right away that he is not a robot. He quickly swings his legs down and gets up and shuts his door. And I speak up because I'm getting a little weirded out by this whole thing, and I want to know what's going on, what's with all the robots. But this guy is a squirrely guy, and he just tells me, "It's nice to meet me too." So we're not really off to a great foot here. Julius steps in and tells him who he is. He tells the man that we are his aides and that we're here to help him figure out what happened. But the guy plays stupid at first, and he acts like he doesn't know what Julius is even talking about. But then he kind of comes around, and he actually sounds a little bit threatening and says he can't help us with what happened, he can't help us on our end, and they've shut the project down. And he tells us the whole thing happened 10 years ago, and they don't even talk about it anymore. Now, back in our world, this thing happened 3 months ago. So this tells us they're about a decade into the future. This guy doesn't know who we are. I doubt he even believes us right now. And we basically just realize that this guy isn't going to help us at all. He's actually against us. And then he gestures like he's going to call someone, but there's no actual phone, so we're not sure at first. But he touches his desk, and a phone pad lights up. He's probably calling security, but we can't let that happen because this guy is dangerous to our mission. Frankie walks up to him and advises him strongly to stop what he's doing. But the guy just smiles. In the meantime, though, Scarlett had pulled out her pulsimeter, and she points and shoots it. And immediately, our office guy slumped down in his chair and onto his desk. So these things work just fine. When he slumps down onto his desk, other things light up. And we can see, like on the front of his desk, what would be a nameplate. It's now in lights, and it says, Director Jameson. So Director Jameson is going to sleep for a while. The pulse won't kill anyone, but it will keep him knocked out, at least for a few hours. After that, we're not sure, but we'll try to be back before that happens. So Director Jameson really wasn't any help to us. He didn't give us any information, but we do need to find some, and we need to find out what's going on. So we head out to explore the other areas at CERN. Part 3. We leave there wondering where all the other real people of CERN are and why there are so many robots, but we know there's nothing else we can do here, and we're not going to get anywhere with these guys, so we make our way to the entrance of CERN to see if anyone there can give us some general information about what's going on. So we get there, and there's a young woman sitting there. She has blonde hair. We can tell immediately that she's human, and she's a younger woman. We start asking her questions, and it's funny. She leans forward, and she starts talking pretty low, like we're her new best friends. And she tells us she's only been working there for a few days. You know, things like the other assistant went missing and they needed a replacement. She goes on about how lucky she is to have this job and all of that, but we try to get her back on track with what we want to know. We keep digging. And we basically, what we find out is that there was a blast here at CERN 10 years ago, and it knocked out most of the employees. And when they woke up, they were either crazy or depressed. They didn't publicize this information that this all started at CERN, but it was big. I mean, really, everyone that was affected by the blast either ran off or took their own lives. And this included people inside and outside of CERN. I mean, this girl is spilling the beans at this point. She tells us that over time, they created human-like robots to replace the employees, to replace the people. They downloaded certain programs to them, so they were actually getting some things done, but it was really all for show. The guys in charge needed funding, and the robots didn't need to get paid because they didn't need to go anywhere. They didn't need to eat, anything like that. She tells us there are only a handful of actual people still left at CERN, and she's one of them, to maintain the look of real people at the front. Then Julius, in the middle of all this, starts having a coughing fit out of nowhere. And anything that happens to Julius is of concern. So we all just look at him, but it seems to pass. So looks like we're good for now. We ask the young woman what it's like outside, and she tells us we're going to find the same thing, that basically anyone that was affected and couldn't be accounted for was replaced by a robot. And she's still talking to us when a man walks up. He smiles at her, and then he just nods at us and asks if we will go with him. The woman instantly just puts her head down and starts typing, and we have to figure out what this guy wants. But then two more guys walk up, and now we really need to figure out what to do. These guys don't look armed, but if they're as fast as they are strong, our chance of getting out of this is dwindling. I look at my team and we all know. We grab our pulsimeters and start shooting these guys. Each one takes about 3 hits before they go down. And who knows for how long, so we make a run for it. I mean, at that point, that's really all we can do. And we have no idea where we're going, but we're just running and we're booking it. And we notice there are people outside, some walking, some driving around. They don't even notice us at first. And I'm just thinking, these cannot all be robots. But I really don't have time to stop and check all that out. Because I notice, I mean, we've gone a ways, but the guys from CERN, they're already back up and they're chasing us. So if they had super speed, they would have caught up to us by now. So at least we figured that out. But they're still coming after us. We head for this electric train that is floating above the street. And we run up some metal stairs, and when it makes a stop, we just get on and we take a seat. We look outside, and the robot guys from CERN caught up to us. Well, almost. We got on the train just in time. And the train was pretty full, so we're not all sitting together. And it's pretty eerie in there, because when we take a look around, you can see all these people, at least the ones that are in our car, are robots. Anyway, we're just relieved that we could hop on. You know, things must be free in the future like that, which is great for us right now. So when this thing gets going, it really starts moving, and we have no idea even where we're going, and we don't know when it's going to stop. And I'm just looking out the window, and the guy next to me looks at me, and I see him do it, so I look back at him. And when I do, he holds his stare on me for about 15 seconds, and then his eyes go red. I mean, they look like tiny red car lights. And I'm looking at that when he grabs me by the neck. I feel the strong grip, just like Frankie got with his handshake, so I don't have much time here. If it weren't for Scarlett, who had a seat behind me, tasing him, it could have ended badly. So anyway, she does that, and it doesn't take him out, it just stops him, and he goes back to looking ahead. All the people in that car were just looking forward. I mean, it was kind of creepy. And we really didn't know exactly what the tasing would do to this guy. I mean, he stopped, and it appeared to put him back to what he was doing, but did it really snap him out of it altogether? We don't want to wait to find out. And when the train gets to its next stop, we just get up and get out and get ourselves out of there. And no one else gets off with us. That was weird, too. The whole thing is just very bizarre. It's the weirdest thing to be around when you're around all that many robots. And, I mean, we see them on the internet and the robots that look like people and all of that stuff. But, I mean, this was the whole place was full of them. But anyway, we get down to the sidewalk and we see a bigger building and decide that might be a good place to hide out and figure out what to do. We get over there and we realize that it's a playhouse, and this is good because there should be good places to hide. As we're walking inside, Julius's head starts to hurt again. We get him inside and sit him down in the lobby quick, hopefully quick. We can hear people, but we don't know where they are just yet. I look at Julius and just start asking him some questions. But for a minute, he doesn't even know who I am. And I remind him, and that's all good. But then he just starts asking where we are and what we're doing. So this is getting pretty bad, these little spells he's having. All I can hope for right now is that he comes back to us so we can figure out what to do. And after a few more minutes, he blurts out, "The portal." And then he starts to come back, and he remembers what's going on. And he also knows that he went to a different place for a few minutes, which is interesting. He also can feel that his time is limited, so we get up and we start looking for where the noise is coming from, and we see that there's a play rehearsal. And the great news is that it looks like all the people are human. You know, we're able to call it pretty good now, and more quickly with what we've seen so far. And a young man walks up to us, it startles us actually, and points to some seats in the back row. So we take the seats, you know, we don't want to do anything that stands out and we're just trying to make it easier. But really, we do need to find a place to go and talk and make a plan. So we decide we'll just sit there until our little usher goes somewhere, and then we'll head back out. Him seating us, though, did cause a little bit of attention to turn to us. And the sign said there's 4 stages, and they're all pretty small, so it's not like we're really far in the back. Anyway, it caused a few people to look back. They all smiled and turned around, and then they turned back to the play, except for one. He gets up, and he walks back to where we are. Now, he is definitely a robot. He leans down and looks at Julius, but I pull him away as fast as I can. I mean, when these guys really look at you, it seems like they look at you really hard, and it's almost like they're scanning to see what and who we are. I didn't see this guy's eyes turn red, though, before I got Julius out of there, so I'm hoping he didn't notice anything, because that's how they're doing it. I'm pretty convinced. Anyway, we take off, and we head over to the next stage. We run right up to it, and we head back behind the curtain. We can see the stage is set up for some kind of play. There's a treehouse and little bushes and a doghouse and stuff like that. We all just stop for a second, and then Julius starts speaking, and he says that there's nothing else we can do in this world. There's nothing we can get. There's nothing we can do in this dimension, that it's too far gone and too far into the future. He doesn't want to see CERN go down, and he doesn't want robots everywhere. So all he knows is this portal must be closed. Anything coming through would only hurt us. And he says he can feel it very strongly that he is definitely running out of time. He wants as much intel as he can get, but he doesn't want anything or anyone coming back through to our world, so we have to get out of there. He wants to get back to CERN, take what we can, and get home. Right then, as we're talking, Frankie runs into the treehouse, and it makes a scraping sound on the stage floor. So our little talk comes to a screeching halt. We don't want anyone to hear us in there, and we're hoping no one heard that. But we're not so lucky. Someone did hear it, or they followed us. Either way, the stage doors slammed shut. They were both open when we came in. I tiptoe over to the edge of the curtain. I can barely see out, but what I can see isn't good. It looks like 5 of our robot friends are coming our way. They aren't moving very fast. Not sure really if they ever do, but with my neck getting red and starting to bruise, I know I don't want any of their strength on me again, any of us. I can see that their eyes are red. I mean, they came looking for us. All I can figure is the guy in the other stage must have looked long enough to realize that they don't want us here. I mean, I guess I can see why. I mean, we want nothing to do with these things. We back up to behind the next curtain, and then there's really not a whole lot back there or really anywhere to go. The only choice we have is to head up to the catwalk, so that's what we do. We get up there, and we try to listen, and we're looking down onto the stage so we can see if anyone comes through down there, and we wait, and then Julius starts coughing again. Not too bad, but I can also see that he can't help it. We really need to get back. We won't be doing that right now, though, because we hear another noise, and there are 3 of those guys up here with us. So there must be another way up. It doesn't matter, because right now we just have this big problem. I don't want to lose Julius, and now we have these guys. And I'm thinking, okay, I saw 5, so where are the rest of them? And so, just so you can picture this, there really isn't anywhere for us to go. We have about 2 rows of planks and things that we can move back a little ways, but that's not really going to do us any good. These guys are walking right towards us. We already know we can't fight them off, so we're going to have to somehow get our weapons on them. And if they get our weapons, we're toast. And I mean, Julius is still coughing, and at the moment, all I can do is yell out to him. In between figuring out what to do, I'm asking him if he knows my name. And when I get the wrong answer, it sets off a whole nother level of urgency within me, and I yell out again, but this time it's to my team, that we're going down. We're going to take the ropes. I grab Julius, and I basically tell him to follow me or he's going to regret it. And now, he doesn't know who I am, and I think he thinks he's kidnapped. Either way, I get him down the rope. Scarlet makes it, but Frankie isn't so lucky. He ends up in a scuffle with a guy or the guys above, and there's just a lot of noise. We can't see anything. And then a light falls, and we're trying to look up and see if there's anything we can see. But then one of the robot guys falls onto the stage, and then Frankie does. The robot guy pretty much fell right in front of Scarlet, though, and she just bends down and uses her emitter on him, and he goes out. Frankie comes crashing down next, and he hits the stage floor hard. I can see he's hurting, but he gives me the look that he'll be okay. We're lucky these stages are smaller. But now The fight has come to us. Frankie is working to get up, but a guy goes for him. So he knocks over a tree prop and rolls to the side. The guy gets knocked to the side and falls into me. And when he does, I get him with my emitter right in his side. But just as I'm doing that, I get tackled to the floor. And my emitter falls to the ground with me and out of my hand. I hit my head on the stage floor, but I am able to get to my knees and I'm trying to shake it off. But the guy then bends down and pulls me up. And so we're going at it with each other until I fall into the treehouse. And I fell into it hard, hard enough that it cracked. Out of nowhere, when all this is going on, Julius calls out that he knows me. And he gets the guy that I was tumbling around with and who was coming after with me again. And I'm getting up. And what I didn't notice was that Scarlett is backed up against a wall. And one of the guys has her arms pinned to it. And the wall she's up against is brick, and it's actually making the tops of her hands bleed. Frankie's able to run over to her and get the guy. So now there's only one left. And he's face to face with Julius. They're staring each other down, which to me looks like a bad idea. It's the first guy that we saw here. It's the guy from the stage, and he must have caught on to us. That's what I'm thinking. I don't know why he's not taking down Julius, though, or trying to. Me and my team just start walking closer to them to see what's going on. This guy knows something or something's happening, but what is it? What's going on? Because now we're all standing there around these two in a circle, and Julius isn't saying anything either, but I finally do, and I ask them what's going on. We all have our emitters out now, and we're ready to go if this guy gets weird. I also scan the room quick to see if he's, you know, called in for backup somehow, but there's no one else. I tap the guy with my emitter, you know, like, hey, wake up. And then it's like he does, and he looks at me, and he says he's not like them, and he didn't call them, that they followed us. So, of course, now we know these are the guys from CERN. What happened here was our little robot friend went to look for us because he realized what we were here for, and the others arrived and followed him in. If he didn't act like he was doing the same thing, they would know. But know what? Turns out there are some robots that have morphed over time. But we get interrupted talking about all that by some more noises, and we don't want to take any more risks in this place. We just need to get back to CERN so that we're closer to our escape route. We have to get back outside and onto the train. But to help us not be so noticeable, we go down to the costumes to see if there's anything that can help us. And nothing fancy, but Scarlett and I grab some wigs and jackets, and Frankie grabs some glasses and hats for himself and Julius. Mr. Robot Guy doesn't get anything, though, because he wants to blend in. He needs to, so he can seem and be like the others, so he doesn't get noticed. The only bad thing happening right now is that we're losing Julius again, and this time it could be for good. He doesn't want to put on his disguise, and we really just need to get him on the train. Frankie gets him to put on his stuff, but then on the way to catch the train, Julius is fighting us the whole way. He's turned against us. He no longer remembers why we're there, and this time, he's not scared if he was kidnapped. He pretty much just hates our guts. It's really weird. I mean, he's actually trying to pick a fight with us. It's obnoxious and a little hard to deal with in the situation we're in, but we need to, or do our best at least, and keep going. I mean, we would only use our emitters or tase Julius if we absolutely had to, because we need him to be able to come with us. And it would look pretty strange if we were just carrying this guy into CERN or on the train for that matter. Frankie, though, can be pretty intimidating. And he shows him his emitter and lets him know that he is with us and that he's coming with us, no matter what. And once we get where we're going, he can leave us if he wants to. He doesn't really have a choice, though, right now, and Julius just has to accept it. Fortunately for us, we get a train that's a little less full, and we sit in the back so we can keep our eyes on everyone. And when we get back to CERN, that's where we're a little more worried that we will have issues. We have to get in and get to our door and get out of here. Final part 4. Okay, so we're back at CERN and we're trying to get back to the lab, but we also really need to get some information, some data, because that's one thing that we came for that we don't have yet. It's part of Julius's job, his goals here, and without it, our job would be incomplete. We still have our robot with us, and he's going to help us and walk ahead of us, telling us if it's safe. First off, our blonde admin is not at her desk. She was probably fired, but it's good for us that she's not there. So we make it past that, and we walk for a while until the robot signals to us that people are coming. So we look for an empty room, and we find one, and we go in. And we realize that we're in a conference room, and inside that conference room are computers, which is awesome for me because I can use them to try to get information. There are small laptops set up at every seat, which there are six. So I sit down and set up to get whatever information I can for Julius. We don't have a lot of time, but I want to get anything I can. Now, as I work to get in, Frankie takes Julius and sets him down and puts himself right next to him to try to keep him quiet and keep him from moving. Our robot comes back, and I ask him to watch the door for us while I get what we need. And then I ask him to fill in some blanks on why he's different and what's going on with all of that. And he talks while I work. He knows we are from somewhere else, but he isn't worried about us ruining anything, which is great because I want the info. Anyway, he explains that the robots were meant to help replace humanity after it started self-destructing. Maybe it sounded like a good idea, but now the robots are getting skills beyond that of humans. He says that if these robots are not controlled, they can take down any human they choose and become the only race, if you will. They work, sure, but they're also seek and destroyers. And if you get enough of them together, they can do quite the damage. But then you have him. He's different. He says he has real thoughts and feelings, and that's part of these new programs they're using. But for some of the robots, he thinks it's more emotions and feelings than the humans realized were possible. And now these particular robots are hiding among the robots. They're hiding their feelings, but they know a lot more about what's going on. They're more aware than the controlled robots. These type of robots, the feeling robots, are actually trying to come together collectively and form lives. He says they want to try to build communities and put together families somehow. You know, and I hear that and I'm wondering, how can that happen? But anyway, they can't get away from the fact that the humans and controlled robots are in their way, and it doesn't look like that's going to change anytime soon. So, I mean, basically, in this world, what I've learned is there are three different life forms, if you will, trying to make up the human race. They have the humans, the controlled robots, and the feeling robots. It's a total mess, and it's actually pretty sad. The humans have the controlled robots so they can keep making money and have jobs and pretend to have normal lives. The robots don't need anything, so all the humans just get more. You know, it's greed, again. They want to be in control, and they feel like they're superior. However, the controlled robots are getting stronger and stronger. And neither of these two groups realize that the feeling robots even exist, that they're even out there. They aren't sharing what they know. So no one knows that they know what's going on. Not yet. It's just all a mess of different situations. But I'm listening and taking it all in, and then I actually find something with what I'm doing. I had to dig pretty deep to get to anything useful. But part of what Julius and the guys showed me at the villa on what to expect here was how their file structure was at CERN. So if this was anything like it was on our side, it would help me get the information. And it helped a lot. They haven't changed much in 10 years, but they have so much information that would be kind of hard to do. Anyway, I find two folders in the master database, and they're in a private folder. One is called Project Solution, and the other is called Project Closeout. And it's among other things. But digging in those, I can see that this information has to do with why we're here and the total transformation of life. I don't waste any time, and I just take the entire private folder. I break out my own digital items, and I get it all downloaded. And it's good timing, too, because now our robot says we have to go. So I close everything out like it was when I got there, and we head out. We make it through the hallways into the elevator, but then we decide we don't want to wait for that. It's a little risky, so we take the stairs. We did have to dodge quite a few more people along the way, but we're making it so far. We get down to the lab, and that's a little bit of a different story. Our boss man woke up. And he's down there, and he's kicked out all the robots, which is at least good for us, and now he's talking to the two men that let us in. He's trying to get information on us. Our robot friend doesn't stay. It's too risky, and he just disappears down the hallway. And really, there's nothing more he can do for us, and there's really nothing we can do for him. So now we have the three guys, and we need to get past them. But really, at this point, all that seems pretty easy since, you know, they can't be as strong as the robots are. All we really need to do is show our admitters. Without the robots there, there's nothing much they can do. Besides, the two guys that let us in aren't looking so good. They're sweating and they look nervous. We tell the three of them that we are leaving. And they don't know what we've seen or the information we've gotten, but there's nothing really they can do to stop us either. Well, the boss man gets the bright idea of ordering the other two guys to attack us, and he tries to come at us also. Unfortunately, we have to use our emitters one last time. You know, they don't really hurt them, but it's not going to hurt us either that they're out of our way. So with them down and out, we take advantage. We take another look around to see if there's anything else that we might want to use back in our world for reference or information. We find that the two men were working on a project. They have been on this project for 7 years. The data on their computers show that they were also trying to remove the energy that ricocheted back to them when the portal was opened. They have yet to find a solution in all that time. We see that there are still humans suffering from that energy blast back then, but it also looks like it might be coming to an end on its own. But of course, we know now that they have a new problem, the robots. Okay, well, we spend about a half hour looking at this information with the door barricaded like it was before when we got there, but no one even attempts to come in. I mean, with no one ever coming down to that lab, it would appear that this project here was somewhat secretive or secret altogether. And, you know, we're all looking at it and finding it pretty interesting, but then we're reminded of Julius and our urgency to get out of here because he just keeps trying to get out and he just won't stop talking. And we don't even know what he's talking about. I don't think he knows either. But the information is fascinating, even though it doesn't really look good for us, unfortunately. I mean, they didn't figure anything out that could work in 7 years. Wow. But, you know, anyway, there could still be valuable data inside of what they've worked on. Maybe like what not to work on for us. So again, I grab it all. And then we really are ready to leave and get Julius home. We make our way to the other room and step inside the portal hole. Julius, of course, is fighting us the whole way. There's no miss now. And we can see our capsule. It's right where we left it. So are our suits and things. So all we have to do is hope the capsule works now, you know, that it actually works. According to the guys back home, it will fingerprint start. They took our fingerprints back at the lab and programmed them into the capsule. Any one of our fingerprints can set it to return from where it came. We get in, and all I'm thinking is it's going to be really interesting because we sit there and realize that we'll be heading backwards. Also, the fight to get Julius strapped in was kind of a mess, but we do get him there, though, and when we take off, he shuts up immediately. And the ride was pretty smooth, aside from the takeoff, and it turns out the capsule ride back was the same. We had the bright white light and the screeching sounds that happened towards the end of our trip, just like it did towards the end of our trip out. It was really just the same trip in reverse. The capsule slows down and comes to a stop before the track that we took off on. And we just got out like before and head into the blast room. No one's in there now, but there are some guys behind that glass in the next room. So we head on in and take our suits off and everything. Let them know it was a pretty crazy trip, so they need to be ready to sit with us for a while. And this is Julius's baby, though. So the first priority is to get him back to normal, if that's possible. I didn't know what they were going to do to get him there, but they had a solution, and it was easy. They simply just gave him the injection, and it cleared him up immediately. He knew that he had gone somewhere else, that he had blacked out time, but he had zero memory in this world of what it was like to forget who he was or what he was talking about. Anyway, they also take out our identity chips, which is good. So we're all pretty tired from the run, and the group chooses to go back to the villa. We're going to eat and have a debriefing. And that sounds great to us. When we get there and we sit at the table, you know, Julius was out at the end there and he was very happy that we were able to get the information we did. So we loaded up on the computer there and he can't believe what he's seeing. I scanned through the information just to make sure it would be helpful, but the details of it are for CERN and that's not part of my job. And aside from all of that, and even with Julius out for a while, he picked up on a lot of information from the feeling robot. He knows there are a lot of problems in that world, and he just hopes that the information we brought back can help us solve the problem in our world. Me and my team give the information on what happened towards the end, what CERN was like, how the boss man had basically taken over with his cohorts and were running CERN for money. We also told them how the structure of society was a mess and pretty much represented a society that didn't exist. Everyone was independent and nobody would talk to each other. And we all took pause for a minute and thought about how similar our own society is getting that way. And I mean, it was clear to us, you know, when we had thoughts that there were people like us over there living a shifted life to our own, you know, that all changed too. I mean, the world went into destructive mode, and most of us don't even exist there. And you have to remember that Ryder and Jaeger are there too. They're listening to all of this for the first time. They didn't go with us. And they have these just surprised looks on their faces. I mean, part surprise, and I think a lot of it was just disappointment of what we found over there. And okay, it was in the hands of CERN now to try to fix what had happened. They wanted to close that portal. They would still work on portals, that part was clear, but their chance of going back to that particular world was slim to none. Information would be helpful, no doubt, and they would keep doing what they're doing, trying to get more information on anything that could help us here. And really, with that, our job was done at CERN. Going to the other dimension was definitely something that opened up our eyes. Definitely was a story I thought was worth sharing with you guys. So basically, we pack up all of our stuff and we leave the villa and we head back home. And we're all quiet on the ride home. It was a lot to take in. You know, a job like that doesn't leave you for a while, if ever. But we do make it back, and it's time to check in and see what's going on. I have a few requests to review on what to do next. But first, I'm going to get some shut-eye. Thank you for listening to this vlog. I hope you liked the longer extended version. A lot of you wanted that. I can definitely fit more in if it's not as short, but you guys let me know what you prefer. There's another vlog and adventure around the corner, so like and subscribe and see what's coming up next. And I will talk to you all soon.